I grew up in the 60s. Yes, it's true. I grew up in the era of Ozzie and Harriet, and Leave It to Beaver, Father Knows Best, I Love Lucy, and My Three Sons. Remember My Three Sons? Well, back then it was a time when male and female roles were very strictly defined, not only on television, but at home. And so my mother was a housewife, as we called them then, and my father was the breadwinner. My mom cooked and cleaned and comforted, and she was always there for us. And my dad made the money and ruled the house and watched sports and laid down the law. Well, in a way, they offset one another and were a pretty good team. And some people say that looking back on that, that's a time when men were men and women were women. It's a little different way of looking at that. I look at it as a time when men were emotionally deprived and women and women were intellectually suppressed. But neither was really living into their wholeness. Well, thankfully, times have changed. They've changed quite a bit. And even though we may not yet have the full equality that we would like to have, we've come a very long way. So today we have stay-at-home dads as well as stay-at-home moms. We have women in the workforce, the military, the government, politics, ministry, as well as men. And today we allow both men and women the freedom to marry who they love, whether that person is of the opposite sex or the same sex. Now, the world has really changed. It's kind of mind-boggling how much has changed. So today, although not consistently so, we encourage men more to feel and express their feelings. We encourage women to own their power and to speak their truth. And so while we still may have a ways to go, there's tremendous progress being made, and perhaps the most significant thing is that we no longer consider masculine and feminine to be very strict delineations of roles around gender. Rather, we've come to realize that we all have the masculine and the feminine within us. And we each find our way in developing each of those aspects of ourselves in whatever way is right for us so that we can come into our wholeness. It's all good, and it's all God. So on Mother's Day, certainly this is a time to honor and celebrate our mothers and our grandmothers and our stepmothers and our godmothers and really any mother figures in our lives, but it's also a really perfect time to appreciate the feminine in all of us. So I brought a little video that shows, I think it signifies the ways in which we now see the feminine, we would call it, expressed in ways that are quite different from the past. Now, I don't know about you, but in my wildest dreams, I cannot imagine my father wearing a snuggly. Anyway, mind-blowing. Well, we've come to appreciate the feminine as an integral part of who we are. We've come to see that it is actually a necessary component in our wholeness. Well, Jesus knew this, and he wanted us to know it as well. You know, we think of him as the way shower, helping us integrate our divine self and our human self, but he was also showing us the way to integrate our masculine and our feminine sides. It's not commonly realized that Jesus embodied and advocated very strongly for the divine feminine. And he did so because he was trying to pull back into balance the very highly patriarchal world that he lived in. Now, this may come as a bit of surprise to you. You don't really read much about this in the Christian Bible. You know, about, I mean, we know that Jesus helped women, he was a friend to women, but really a champion of them to this degree, an advocate of the divine feminine. You don't really find that in the what we call the New Testament. But you do find it in the books that were left out of the New Testament. Oh yes, you find it in, among other places, you find it in what we call the Christian Gnostics, the Gnostics. And the Gnostic just simply means knowing. How many of you are familiar with the Gnostics? Right, so the Gnostic community, the Gnostic Christians, were among the first communities that gathered very soon after Jesus' death to try to fully understand what his teachings were and to apply those in their own lives. They had a very different perspective on things. And so in perusing some of those texts, here are some of the things that stood out for me. In the Gospel of Thomas, Jesus said, when you make the two into one, and then he says, in the inner and the outer and the above is the below, but then he goes on to say, and when you make male and female into a single one, so that the male shall not be male and the female shall not be female, then you will enter the kingdom. Well, that can be a little perplexing to get our heads around, but essentially he was talking about the uniting of the polarities in us so that we come into our wholeness and we are then able to ignite the spirit within us for divine consciousness. Jesus also often overlooked that he surrounded himself not only with male disciples, but with holy women. And they included his mother, Mary. They included Mary Magdalene, the beloved companion, and her sister Martha, and many other holy women as well. They were a prominent part of his ministry, and they were like a visible demonstration to convey the importance of this balance between the masculine and the feminine. We also know that Jesus spoke sometimes of the union of the bride and the bridegroom, and that was really speaking about the masculine and the feminine aspects of us, saying that when they are brought together in union, when they're brought together in marriage, that is when we enter into what we now call Christ consciousness. He would have called it the kingdom of heaven or the kingdom of God. And finally, this is something I hadn't really realized before. You know, we talk about how Jesus would address God as Father and Abba. It's what we find in the New Testament, the Christian Bible. But if you look in many of the Gnostic texts, he actually would refer to the Creator as Abba, Amma, as Mother, Father God, Father, Mother God. So we must remember that Jesus was growing up in a time he was familiar with Hebrew wisdom literature that actually spoke about divine wisdom as being personified by Sophia. She was the female personification of God. And it is said that she was the first creation of God, and that Sophia worked in tandem with the divine masculine, with divine mind, to then create all that followed from that. Well, it's intriguing, and when we remember that that was part of the literature of that time, we can see why that would be reflected in Jesus' language. Well, this, of course, is what the Gnostics all believed, and it's what they wrote about. But it is not what the church fathers believed. And it certainly isn't what they wanted to include as they put together the canon. So author Tricia McCannon writes, "The Catholic Church so strongly opposed the Gnostics that every one of the secret texts revered by the Gnostics was omitted from the canonical collection and branded as heretical by those who called themselves Orthodox Christians." She goes on to add that by the time the church fathers finished sorting through the various writings, deciding what was in, what was out, that virtually all of the feminine imagery for God had been eliminated. Men were given sole authority. Let's breathe, shall we? So this is what the church decided, but it isn't, in my view, it is not what Jesus taught. Jesus taught wholeness, not division. He taught empowerment, not domination. He spoke about the value of integrating, not obliterating, the feminine. And I believe that he exemplified this in his own self. You know, to me, as I look to Jesus as way shower, I see him as expressing this beautiful balance himself of masculine and feminine. So certainly, he demonstrated tremendous power and will and courage as a leader, as a visionary. But at the same time, he could just show the most exquisite gentleness and kindness and care. You know, really, what could be more tender than washing the feet of one's disciples? What could be sweeter than gathering the children to delight in their innocence? And what could be more compassionate than healing the sick and feeding the hungry? And in the Gnostic Gospels, there are many stories that speak about Jesus' very purposeful kindness towards animals and the ways in which he wanted others to see the animals as part of us. Well, of course, we know now that he also held women in the very highest esteem. And at the top of his list was Mary Magdalene. Elaine Pagels, in her book, The Gnostic Gospels, which we have a few copies left in our bookstore, she says that Jesus praises Mary Magdalene not only as a visionary, but as the apostle who excels above all the rest. She was known as the apostle of the apostles, the preeminent disciple of Jesus' message. Listen to this. Jesus called her the woman who knew the all. She was equated with Sophia, the divine mother of wisdom. And it is said that Mary Magdalene may well have been the single most important teacher other than Jesus in the Christian movement. And for centuries after Jesus' death, she continued to be revered, not just because she was his partner, but because she was a remarkable teacher in her own right. There are something like 250 wisdom sayings attributed to her. Is this at all different from how you've heard about Mary Magdalene in the past? I'm going to guess that it is. So what I heard about Mary Magdalene is that she was a prostitute or a fallen woman. So Bible scholars tell us there's absolutely no evidence for that. What is more likely is that the church fathers put her in that role to keep her from being a factor here, to minimize her role, to diminish her importance. It was sort of a purposeful way of, again, holding on to that authority for the men. But the Gnostic Gospels were quite clear in saying that Mary Magdalene, they called her Lady Mary. They said Lady Mary was the foremost apostle, that she was the partner and the wife of Jesus, that she was the female spiritual reflection of him. Notice how I just snuck in there that she was his wife. So let's remember a few years ago when everything just kind of got full tilt over whether Jesus was married. And I realized that that pretty much upended the traditional Christian church and certainly the Catholic Church. But I have to say that thinking or believing that Jesus was married makes me love him all the more. It makes me so happy that he had the fullness of human experience while he was here, that he enjoyed that kind of intimacy, that kind of connection and partnership with someone very, very dear to him. So when I was doing my research for this talk, I ran across really something amazing. It's a stained glass window and it's in a little church on a western island of Scotland. And it is, I think it was commissioned or it was added to the church in like 1906. I just want to say that because it was long before the Da Vinci Code. But I'd like you to take a look at this stained glass window. It's called the Magdalene Window, and actually Kilmore Church means the Church of Mary. So there are a number of very interesting things to notice here. First is the tenderness and the intimacy between them. We notice the way that they are holding hands. It was actually a way in which that signified marriage, the way in which they were joining right hands. And then we certainly can't miss the fact that her belt is hanging lower. And it would seem obvious in this beautiful depiction that she was with child. Pretty amazing, isn't it? And there it sits in this little church way out on an island in Scotland, and people come to see it regularly. I think it has an aura about it, don't you? That is just beautiful. It would seem in the Judeo-Christian tradition that we have tended to suppress the divine feminine, but it's time now to bring it back. Not just because this is what Jesus taught, but because this is what our world needs. It is really rediscovering the strength and the wisdom of the feminine in us, and tapping into that wisdom of the heart to let it be a guidance for us in how we live our lives. It is the counterbalance to the masculine intellect, science, and the analytical thinking. It creates that bigger sense of perspective and love. This is a day when we can appreciate those in our lives who brought forth this kind of wisdom, the wise women that we have known and that have helped shape our lives. And so on this Mother's Day, I, of course, am thinking of my mother, probably the wisest woman I know. Mom thought she wasn't very smart because she didn't go to college. Well, she didn't finish college. And so she may not have been book smart. As a child, I just thought, well, she's got a lot of common sense. But it was so much more than that. She had a profound wisdom within her, and it guided her through her entire life. I hadn't realized just how much she tapped into that or how much she lived that with other people until we had her celebration of life service in November. And a few people got up to speak about, in particular, my mother's propensity for unconditional love, truly the best gift anyone can give someone else. But the most moving moment of the service was when my transgender nephew, Toby, got up to speak. And he was shaking. And he shared with us an excerpt from a letter he had received from my mother in 2005. And it was very soon after he'd made his gender transition. 2005, my mother was 77 years old. And she was the first one to reach out to Toby. And so here is some of what she said to Toby. I understand you are living a new lifestyle. It will take a little time for us to make the adjustment. As smart as you are, I know you gave a lot of time, research, and thought to the pros and cons of your choice. There is a sadness we have felt, but not condemnation. We are given one body and one life to live it in. The choices we make, under duress or not, with this body and life, determine our destiny. Having never walked in those shoes, who am I to judge? People do what they have to do in search of peace of mind. And then she wrote, her husband's name was Scotty, she wrote, Scotty just came home and I must get going on chores. Always remember that we all love you and that will never change. Love, Nana. My mom had that Sophia wisdom. I was so blessed. And she has helped all of us to see, and certainly through that example, that the masculine and feminine in us may express in very different ways, and we each try to find the right balance. And when we have found that balance, we know it, because we feel more alive, we feel full, we feel whole, we feel joyful. And I'm so happy to report that my nephew Toby is one of the happiest people I know. So on this Mother's Day, let us celebrate the glory of the feminine. Let us appreciate the wise people, the wise women who have come before us, the people who have shown us the way, whether Jesus, Mary Magdalene, Sophia, our own mothers, whoever it may be, shown us the way to our own wholeness. And let us appreciate the ways in which they helped us to feel our feelings, to share what we know, and to be who we are. Happy Mother's Day. Let's turn now to meditation.